The following podcast may contain discussions supported by science that may be considered dangerous to some listeners and conspiracy theorists. Discretion is advised.
The Three Down Greencast is brought to you by Lucky Bastard Distillers, Saskatchewan's premier distillery, and by the Pilot Bowens Brewing Company, brewed in the heart of Regina.
Welcome to the Three Down Greencast.
Good.
You are listening to the internet's only John's Trip to the Jump Dump podcast. I am Joel Gasson with John Fraser, as usual, as we have plenty to get to today. The Saskatchewan Roughriders, for the first time since 2018, have won the Banjo Bowl.
Yes.
So we will talk about that. We needed the extra day because John was miserable for a few days afterwards. So
still crying. I still try to be in the whole, oh, it's totally fine. And
now you're just trying to, you know, use the sympathy to sell cars.
It's true. Come buy from me because I'm so sad. But seriously, though, it's been a real slow start to this month. And if you are legitimately on the fence, we do need to sell some vehicles. So
we will talk about the big rider win in Winnipeg over the weekend and how they probably played the game they had to play in Winnipeg in order to win that game. So we'll talk about that. We will, of course, talk about the hit on one Zach Collaris. And we're also going to look ahead a little bit. We don't always do this, but towards the game this weekend against Montreal, because I think it's low-key an important game, but maybe not for the reasons you might think. So we will get into all of that as well. But as I alluded to off the top, it is John Fraser storytelling time. But before we get to that, I do have to recognize a very important moment in football history that has celebrated an anniversary on Tuesday this week. Thanks to our friends, and I still can't believe we get to call them our friends of the show, the Sickos Committee.
I know, it still makes my day every single time.
It's one of the weirdest things in my entire life, in like a very good way, that we somehow know these people that are like very famous. Well, very internet famous, at least, I guess.
Have a much more successful podcast than us.
And, well, they actually, you know, like do work and have multiple media accounts and post from all of them and do all that sort of stuff. So
it's true. Either way, we admire the work they do. And we're, like I said, jealous that we get to call them our friends. Mm-hmm. Not jealous, but like, it's like
it doesn't feel real. It doesn't feel real.
No, it's very much a we're not worthy kind of thing. And I don't mean Xavier worthy.
So yes, it was 8 years ago on Tuesday this week was the infamous 3rd and 93 between Louisiana Tech and Mississippi State. You can find this on their social media feeds. I believe I sent it to John yesterday to celebrate the occasion on Instagram. If you have not seen the play before, essentially Louisiana Tech, the quarterback receives the snap. It kind of, and then just the largest fumble Ruski you could ever see happens because he just never catches. The snap is so awry. Like he doesn't jump on it until their own, till the Mississippi State 30. And then it just keeps bouncing and kicking and pushing all the way down until Louisiana Tech recovers at about the 6 yard line.
It's
remarkable.
Play like the Wackety Sax music the entire way down. Like, you definitely, you have to look this up if you like football. I'm assuming you're a sicko if you're listening to the two of us.
I think that goes without saying, but they say, you know, when it's like 3rd or 4th and 20, you know, they say you don't really have a lot of plays in the playbook. What do you even do? 3rd and 93? Like, that's just incredible. It's just incredible, and it's one of those pure moments that is, like, why we love this sport, because it can honestly just be that ridiculous, and we can all embrace it and love it.
Well, yes, and you can love it. You can love it for the chaos that it is, and I know that's why I love it. Like, that's why I loved the first week of the NFL season. Like, it was absolutely laden with chaos. It was quite fantastic, and nothing quite as good as 3rd and 93, but, you know, it was pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm. One thing that also happened this weekend in the NFL, as we have our first lettuce update of the year that I can remember in the football season.
Yes, we get to hit the song for the first time. The legendary, the voice now of the in-stadium voice of the Edmonton Elks, Graham Mossaman.
Da-da-da, da-da-da, lettuce update.
Mm-hmm. So what you may or may not have heard, Kyler Murray on the day of the game for the Arizona Cardinals was listed as sick. Like he got added to the injury report that day after being fine all week, which doesn't usually happen. Yeah, apparently he woke up at like 4 a.m. and spent much time in the bathroom and had to take Imodium before the game in order to get through it. And yeah, so that can only mean one thing, and that means before the season opening game of the Arizona Cardinals season, Kyler Murray got the lettuce.
Which, you think, like, we need to spread this. We need to go international. We mm-hmm. need to be Mr. Worldwide with the knowledge of the lettuce and the fact that there's a logistical reason.
The next time we're on the Sickos, like, we need to discuss this at length.
Okay, I will make sure it's brought up. But another thing, I want to discuss at length, and it's more of a rant than anything, mm-hmm. is I went to the city dump today. And
so did Kyler Murray.
Hey! And it's a dump story coming from me that doesn't involve the CN Curling Club. I honestly, I've never felt more like a criminal in my life. Like, I felt like at the dump today, I was living some sort of double life. So long story short, in Saskatoon, like, you bring your truck. I had my father-in-law's truck. I pull up, and, like, you pay by what you dump. So they weigh you on your way out. You pay based on how much shit you threw in there. Okay? So on my way out, payment goes through. Computer kind of glitches. Like, my app says it's the payment's gone through. So after the people at the cashier there, they're pretty reasonable. They're like, hey, we can see your payment went through. It's all good. Have a good day. So I leave there and go to the immediate adjacent Recycle Depot, where, same thing, they scan your license plate so they can know, like, if I brought a dead body in there and tried to recycle it, they would know. And this man...
I believe you would take that to the compost, but anyway.
See, this is why I couldn't be a serial killer. I don't know which bin to put it in. Green, blue, they found me. Either way, I think the guy working there thought he'd uncovered the crime of the century. Now, when you weigh, when, like, you're paying for the weigh, there's the big arm that goes down that obviously you'd have to, like, drive through in dramatic action movie fashion to actually, like, get through it. So I end up here ready to recycle. And the Recycle Depot is free, may I add. He's like, nope, you're still signed in over there. I don't know how you got over here, but we can't allow this. And, like, the guy, like, it's like I had been uncovered for some sort of fraud. Three people and 30 minutes later. Like, I've had a lot. I don't think I've ever had a 30-minute dump. But I've been held up for 30 minutes at the dump. And I get it. I enjoy people that take their job seriously. I expect my staff to take their job seriously. But, like, come on, man. It's $15. I did not commit fraud or jump over a median through a concrete block with a very old F-150 to save myself $15. Like, I'm cheap, but I'm not that cheap.
I mean, who's to say, though? I mean, you are a greasy car guy, so, I mean, anything's possible.
That's fair. That's why I had to get rid of it. That's why I had to shave my head, because the head was just, you know, as I, you know, went back to being a car salesperson, technically car sales manager, my hair got instantly greasy, so I just had to shave it all off.
But you did that anyway. You did that before. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, people don't know this. This is why we're not on YouTube. Here I thought I could get away with a reason that isn't my kid getting lice for shaving my head. Mm. And there I just hear...
Said it out loud for the world to know. So I'm sure people are going to be really happy to hear that within your family, because we know you have family members who listen to this podcast. So
it's true. In fairness, though, Grammy and Mom have both heard the story. So that's I don't think I'll be surprising any of them. But if somebody wants to play this at Connor's wedding, you know, like 20-odd years from now, then I will actually feel bad.
I hope there's no record of this podcast in 20 years.
Could you imagine? Could you imagine if we were still doing this for seven listeners?
Oh, God.
No. What would the tech even be like at that point? Could we just, like, tap our head? Like, at that point, like, we'll still be avoiding video.
Yes, we'll be the only thing on the entire internet without video.
We still could never do it. What if the only way you could record is by looking at each other? Now, that I would find a little weird.
Yeah, if I had, like, not only be like, because of the fact of the running bit that we never do this in the same room. Yes. Yeah, just if you had to like look at someone the entire time you were talking to them in order to record, that would just be creepy and weird.
Yeah, yeah. It's like when you're gone and I do it with Greg and I can see Greg. Yeah. It's just it throws me off. Greg's just too goddamn handsome.
Yeah.
And it'd be the same thing for you, right? Like,
I mean, we have done video with like Colin Hodgson and some of those guys a few times.
Yeah, but they're also handsome. You can just stare at them.
Like, I think we usually turn our cameras off when we do that. I don't remember.
That's fair. I mean, I remember
usually the excuse is it saves internet bandwidth. Yeah, that's what we're doing here. It's for the quality.
Well, I remember doing it with Sergio, and all you could see though was the hearts in my eyes looking at Sergio. So I don't think glanced at you.
We turned the cameras on for that one because there was a chance we may have actually done something with the video, and then just never did. So
that's fair. Yeah, yeah. If we put it this way, if we're never going to do anything with video of us with Sergio Castillo, we're never going to do anything with video ever.
No, I think that's probably fair.
And it's for the betterment of all, because my head is very short. In fairness, though, I was, and I can tease this a bit, I was involved in the Rush's schedule release production today that involved video.
Ooh.
So I can't give many details as to what we're doing, but the first teaser
drops. Does it involve lacrosse?
Actually, it involves no lacrosse.
Everything technically involves lacrosse when it comes to a lacrosse team.
Touche.
Yes.
But it does not involve me playing, which is probably good because nobody needs to see that either.
No, no. They don't need to know that their color guy actually does not know how to play the sport.
Oh, I know how to play the sport. I just don't know how to do it well at all. Like, I would put it, it's not like up there, like, how I'm an okay golfer and a really good curler. Like, it's not near the curling and golf spectrum, but it's not quite as bad as I am at bowling. Like, I am
surprised
a terrible
you're not
bowler.
That good at bowling.
I'm awful at bowling.
Huh. I mean, I'm not that good at 5-pin. I'm pretty good at 10-pin, and I credit that to curling because I'm used to looking at something all the way down a long surface.
See, my issue is, though, is I'm so used to, like, getting low and sliding that my body doesn't know what to do. And all I end up doing is hurting my knee.
Okay.
So I am a terrible, like, an atrocious bowler. It's comical how bad I am. Like,
I mean, granted, it's been a long time since I've gone. But there was a time when I lived in Alberta, when bowling with some friends. We went to a 10-pin place.
Yes.
And I played both the best and most aggravating game of my life of bowling. Because, like, it ended up being, like, an incredibly insane score that I'm probably never going to match.
Yes.
But in the moment, it is so infuriating when you get, like, basically a 9 every single frame.
Yes.
Because all you want is that goddamn strike, and you don't get it. But at the end of the day, you're like, huh, I got a 9 in every frame. That's actually a pretty damn good score. But in the moment, it's just so infuriating.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm lucky if in 5-pin, I break 100.
Yeah, well, in 5-pin, I suck. I suck at 5-pin. The balls are too small. I don't like them.
Yeah, I'm bad at all types of bowling. It is, like, universally. Oh, and throwing a frisbee. Throwing a frisbee and bowling. So lacrosse isn't quite there, but it's definitely not golf and curling.
Okay.
So it falls somewhere in that scale. Now that we've clarified that, our sports ability skills.
Absolutely.
However, we should say we're both sneaky good ball players.
It's been a few years since I've played, but yeah. I mean, I always played softball, but yeah, I was decent at it. I'm like, I get on base pretty much almost every at bat, a lot of the time. So.
Right. So there we go.
I'm an on-base percentage kind of guy for sure. So.
Hey, Moneyball, Billy Bean is just looking for that kind of guy.
Also because I'm just not very fast. So, like, if I get anything more than a double, it's like a miracle. So
see, and I'm the other way around. I can lag out a grounder to short while playing slow pitch because I am deceptively fast for a fat guy.
Yeah, no, I don't think I could anymore. But there was a time in my life I've done it occasionally. Like, yeah, like that 60 feet to first base and slope in, like, softball.
Yeah.
I had decent speed for, like, that range, and that was it. Not a foot more.
So, like, you, if we set up, like, next time Grey Cup's in Regina, if we set up the Greencast 40-yard dash, you'd
be great
for...
I'm not running in ice. Are you kidding me?
We can find an indoor facility. I know what we'll do. We might actually need you. I meant to mention this to you in the preamble, and it's funny I mentioned this live. I might need you to be a sideline reporter for the Rush this year. So we could do the race at SaskTel Center. I figure that that might even bring fake Gaynor out of hiding.
Yeah, I'm not on that other website. I don't know if he remembers who I am at this point. So
that's fair. I'm sure he does. I'll slide him a DM. Hmm.
We do remember who the real riders are at this point. I didn't really know how to get over that. There was a few points I'm like, hey, I know what I'm going to say. And I'm going to say what I'm going to say, but then the subject just kept changing. So
I know. It's yeah. I swear, this is not like that one entire year I did it to you on purpose.
No, I know. I know this was like, actually a naturally flowing conversation that I know the people are just enthralled with right now. So, but yes, the Riders did win the Banjo Bowl, not convincingly, but they did it in a fashion that I believe was the way that they had to win the Banjo Bowl in Winnipeg, because otherwise things could have gone a whole lot worse, as we've seen in the past. So we will get into that and a whole bunch more. But I was John for the Pile of Bones Brewing Company. What is in the glass this week?
We're doing a Lucky Bastard Double Fist, because I am somehow entirely out of beer in my house.
My God.
But, thankfully, I have several Saskatoon Berry Iced Teas in my fridge. And, thankfully, last night, as a little treatsy-poo for myself for doing a shitload of yard work after Connor's football game, went and bought myself a 40 of Lucky Bastard Vodka. And as well, thanks to Bryce upstairs for after the program, is a 40 of Gambit Gin. He was our Bryce was a generous god this month.
Yes, but I mentioned to him the other day that I think because of inflation we may have to move up to 40s.
So this was all you're doing?
Maybe, I don't know. I still got a regular size bottle this month, but that had already been planned a few weeks ago. So we'll see. Yeah, I mean, basically if you ask, you can get pretty much anything from him. We know that.
I know that, yes, considering he gave us a
book. And I would imagine at some point you should expect at least a six-pack of the new Blue Hawaiians that are now available.
Oh, yeah.
They're just getting released now, so they're making their way out to stores soonish. No promises when that's happening, but it's supposed to be coming. Basically, coconut drink, the coconut lime vodka with some other flavors. Think of like the cocktail Blue Hawaiian, but in a can. Perfect time for the last week of summer, basically.
I mean, at least you can have those in pretend it's summer.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely. 12 packs will be coming at some point, but not for a while yet. But yes, those are heading our way and out into the wild soon from our friends
at
Lucky Bastard Distillers. For me, I'm drinking what I believe is, what actually I know is the first time we've had this beer on this podcast.
Ooh, interesting.
That would be the relatively new Nokomis Long Lake Lager Light.
Oh, okay.
I managed to get my hand on a few cans, though, because it's only available in like the 24-pack. I didn't really want to buy a 24-pack.
Right, you always want to try something.
In case I didn't like it. Not that I didn't expect to like something from Nokomis, because it's Nokomis and everything they brew is incredible. But I wasn't entirely sure. But anyways, I was given some cans of it under another label, because what that beer is, obviously they sell it on its own, but it's also at a lot of bars and a lot of different places as sort of like their house beer sort of thing.
Interesting.
If you don't know, a lot of bars and restaurants, their house beer is usually some other beer rebranded.
Yes, almost all of them. Yes.
Almost all of them. So in this case, Nokomis Long Lake Lager Light is used in that regard. I was given a few cans of it. Quite tasty. I prefer, obviously, like the full diesel Long Lake Lager.
Yes.
It's got a little more bite to it, as you would expect a not light to have. But for a light beer, this is actually, for my taste, quite drinkable, and one that I may even say Lacey might even like.
Interesting.
Yeah, like it's light. It's got a little bit of flavor, but it's not like overpowering. I wouldn't say it's hoppy or all that bitter or all that much of a bite to it.
Well, I'm now going to have to pick some of that up next time I go bulk beer shopping to refill my very empty fridge.
Because, well, I mean, at the end of the day, if Lacey doesn't like it, you will, so.
That, of course I will. I mean, it's Nokomis, right? Mm-hmm. And it's also probably good that you're going with something light when I'm double fisting vodka because of the stinking football game.
Yes. The stinking football game that the Riders won, and they have won the Banjo Bowl for the first time since 2018. And it was a weird game. Like, it's one of those games where had they played basically anyone else in any other building on any other day, we'd probably rip them for it.
Yes.
Like, just how not great it was, how sort of close it was, how, you know, they struggled at times, they were losing for a while. Like, there wasn't exactly a lot to write home about in this game. Yes, they ended up with a number of interceptions, but realistically, it was far from their best played game. But because it was the Banjo Bowl in Winnipeg, it's hard to hold it against them. I think this is one of those games where this was probably the only way they were realistically going to win this football game. Because no matter how bad, or I guess, you know, historically, even how bad Winnipeg may be, or this year, how sort of average they may be, this is sort of that one game that they know is on the calendar. Same with last week. Like, these are two games, no matter the state of the team, you know, both teams are going to put their best foot forward to try and win that game.
Yes, certainly.
So I think, you know, out of all the sort of possible outcomes where either, you know, I think if had the Bombers won close, we wouldn't have been surprised. Had the Bombers won in a blowout, we wouldn't have been surprised, because we've seen that time and time again in that game. The Riders won a close one, we're not that surprised. If the Riders somehow went into Winnipeg in that game and kicked the shit out of them, I think we all would have been very surprised, and it would have said a heck of a lot about where this team is at right now.
Oh, certainly. You're bang on that.
So the fact that they went in and won close maybe wasn't honestly super surprising. I did pick the Riders to win going into that game, which not a lot of people necessarily did. But I felt they were just the better team, and that's kind of how it played out. Like, Winnipeg, again, like they did in the Labor Day Classic, kind of took their shots early. They, you know, they had their moments, but eventually the Riders were just patient, and they waited it out. They kept it close. They made sure that Bomber machine in the Banjo Bowl didn't get rolling. And when the push came to shove, they made the plays they had to win the game, and eventually just out-talented them.
Well, and I think to me, this was a game that Saskatchewan's defense won for them,
yep.
Right? The offense was mid.
It was good enough to win. Yeah.
Right. I mean, Trevor Harris, no touchdown passes. He's way low on his completion percentage, which you never see from him, right? Like, the offense was just meh, just kind of there, but the defense was incredible. Four interceptions, two off of Zach, two off of Chris Streveler, which, again, you expect interceptions with Chris Streveler when he's forced to throw the ball, right? All his time in the NFL, the man still can't complete a pass, which is wild to me, but... Yeah, it was kind of a lull you to sleep kind of game. They did, like, to the fact that they weathered the storm when Winnipeg is up 13-3 early.
Yeah.
Like, that to me, I was thinking, you know, Winnipeg's up. I'm like, hey, 13-3 first half. I know Zach goes down, but, like, hey, you've got a big lead. You can basically just let Brady and Streveler just run the ball down their throats for the rest of the game, and you're going to come out with a grinded-out, ugly victory. Instead, Saskatchewan shows up for the second half.
Yeah.
And
there was, to me, a very key drive in that game.
Yes.
And this is sort of those moments we've talked about, is sort of Trevor Harris willing his team over the finish line. And I wrote about it in the column after the game. It was after DeMarcus Fields intercepted Zach Collaris. They set up, they were at the Bombers 27-yard line. You know, he kind of runs for 3 yards. He picks up a first down, and then, you know, he sort of runs for 3 yards on first down, which, whatever. So it's 2nd and 7. The play doesn't really develop, and Trevor Harris puts his heads down and runs for a first down. Back-to-back plays, 10 yards, 10 rushing yards, first down. That is what we have been waiting to see from Trevor Harris. And I said it like, no, we do not ever expect Trevor Harris to be Darian Durant to the second half of the West Final, the 2013 West Semifinal. No one is expecting him to go rush for 200 yards and a half. No one. But
he needs to run.
But every so often, you need to recognize the moment and say, hey, we cannot settle for a field goal here. I need to do this right now. And then he did that on two very big plays. They weren't the greatest, grandest runs you'll ever see, but they existed. They kept the drive alive, and A.J. Ouellette ran for a touchdown on the next play. And then it was basically the Riders' ball game from then on out.
And it just keeps going back to me where, you know, this is Harris putting his money where his mouth was.
Yeah.
When this was, what was that, 3 weeks into the season, when he said, we haven't been good enough. And you didn't see that from Trevor Harris. And again, I don't know if I want to see that from Trevor Harris the rest of the way.
Depends on the game in the moment, but yeah.
Yeah, but I'm so worried about Trevor Harris taking a hit here, especially, you know, now that we know that Jake Mayer ain't exactly it. You've got a nice big two-game lead on the rest of the division, although Calgary continues to look good.
Not as much this week, but...
Well, no. I mean, but again, they're like... That Labor Day matchup, you're expecting a split for Calgary-Edmonton, just like you expect a split for Saskatchewan-Winnipeg. And the fact that they didn't get the split, and we talked about this, how coming into this stretch of four games, you had Hamilton, Calgary, Winnipeg, Winnipeg. What would you consider successful? And I think 3-1 blows away any of our expectations.
Well, there was Hamilton at the start, too, and they were still very good at the time. So yeah, you had the 100%. 5, and they went 4-1.
And technically, Hamilton is still the best team in the East Division.
Technically, yes.
Right. I mean,
the wins over Hamilton haven't aged as well over the last few weeks, but yeah.
No, but you still...
It's still a quality win. Like, it's still a quality win, no question.
You came off the bye week. You beat Hamilton. Yeah, you lost to Calgary, which is starting to look more and more, as I describe it, as the puzzle piece team. Just a team that matches up really well with you. And now the coaches have a little bit of time to figure that out, because you have to assume these two teams are going to see each other in the postseason, right? So I think, to me, it's they've proven they can win big games. And... They've proven they can come up big when it matters. The defense came up big this entire game long. Trevor Harris took the team on his back to a degree with those runs as well. And all of a sudden, you're coming into the back half of the season, a two-game lead for a home playoff game and a bye all at New Mosaic. So I think they prove that they are the best team in the league. They just have a matchup problem with Calgary over the past, you know, four games here.
Yeah, it certainly looks that way. I mean, when you're 10-2... and have lost only two games, and it's been to one team, and you've beaten everyone else, I think that says that, yeah, there is obviously something specifically up with the Calgary Stampeders that is giving them issues. And time will tell, you know, should they meet in November, that they can figure it out. If they don't, that'll be a tough pill to swallow for a team that potentially could beat everyone else up along the way.
Certainly reminds me of the Minnesota Vikings to a degree last year. Or you're hoping... You know, Winnipeg, maybe they've got one more playoff game left in that crew, because now you got to think we're
at this point, an upstart Elks team.
Yeah.
Like they've got themselves back into the conversation, both to cross over to the East and potentially even to third place in the West. And I mean,
right,
technically at this point, even an Eastern team crossing over to the West isn't off the table, technically. It's funny, like at the start of the year, we talked so much about how, like, other than, well, forget the everyone but Calgary take.
Yes. Don't listen to the Sickos podcast where we both said, ha, 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 everybody but Calgary could.
But realistically, we thought the league had never been closer than it would be this year. And even to an extent, we expected the Calgary Stampeders to be a better team and a team that would be more difficult to play against, and maybe just wouldn't translate to wins. Well, it translated to wins for them as well. So realistically, I think right now, I mean, Montreal is struggling, but you expect if Davis Alexander comes back, they're going to figure it out. Realistically, you have 1-9 where you could probably think on any given day someone could actually win. And there are all kinds of scenarios that are up in the air where it feels like for the first time in a while, one of these years where anything could happen and we don't really know how the standings are going to shake out for the most part is actually happening. Because usually you have those years you're like, oh my gosh, like there's 8 teams in this league and I think they're all pretty good, and then usually it ends up being pretty chalk and like 5 of them end up being shit.
No, and that's bang on. And it's funny because you literally have Saskatchewan at 10-2, Calgary at 8, and then nobody has more than 7 wins.
Yep.
Hamilton at 7, Winnipeg at 6, Montreal, BC, Edmonton at 5, Toronto and Ottawa. Even Ottawa has a pulse.
Mm-hmm.
There has been a 1-2, and they kicked out the 2.5 and come off the mat and are still in this thing. Like, it's just, it's wild how every game is going to be so big heading down the stretch. And to me, that, again, makes it advantage Saskatchewan. Right? You've got the buffer. You've beat everybody but Calgary. You've got a two-game lead. I'm not saying that they completely put in cruise control.
And I mean, they have a two-game lead over Calgary, specifically for first place in the bye. They have like an 8-point lead plus the tiebreaker over Winnipeg just to host a playoff game.
Certainly, yeah. So we're going to see playoff football at Mosaic Stadium in some form, right? And this gives you, and for the Riders moving forward, this starts giving them some of that flexibility that, like, what Mike O'Shea used to do that I always thought was brilliant and would praise right here on the spot, that, you know, he would, the team would kind of take the foot off the gas post Labor Day a little bit. They'd rest a couple guys that were nicked, and then they'd put the foot back on the gas and make it to the Grey Cup before Zach would blow it, right? So, you know, the Riders are kind of staring that down for the next little bit here. Yeah. And to me, as a Winnipeg fan, I'm just going to say it. I'm with Milt Stegall. I don't think Zach should play again. And all the jokes about me coming out here and saying that Zach is overrated and Zach isn't all he says he should be, this is not me wishful thinking. He is still, by far and wide, our best option at quarterback.
Yeah, there's no better option for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers quarterback right now. No.
No, there isn't. Chris Traveller is a gadget quarterback, and he's proven that. He's basically a less religious, slightly tougher Tim Tebow, right, at this point in his career. He can run a wildcat and maybe complete a pass and maybe win you a football game, but the fact that Zach, you know, has now missed two games this year with a concussion, I forget the exact stat
that I heard. It was like over 30% of the games he hasn't finished this year.
Yeah,
or has missed. And this
goes back to pre-COVID year Zach.
Yeah.
Where the guy was getting seemingly, because I will go ahead and say, and I've said this publicly, as a Bomber fan, that was a marginal roughing the passer. That was not a dirty hit. This was not anybody headhunting Zach. And I hate to say it, if that's the kind of hit that's giving you a concussion, I'm with Milt. It's maybe time to reevaluate.
They haven't confirmed that one way or the other, as far as I know. I know they ruled him out. I forget with what. But I know they've classified everything as a neck this year, and I'm not going to sit here and proclaim that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are a bunch of liars.
But
it's hard to imagine that there wasn't some. Okay, they do have him ruled out this time due to a head injury, at least. So at least we're
being honest. And like, I'm not relating as a professional athlete, but I'm relating as a guy that had concussion problems.
Yeah,
right. Like, it came a point where I quit playing not just competitive hockey, but like competitive rec hockey, because I simply bumped into a guy. And it was nothing serious. It was just I collided with another player. There was no ill intent. We both ended up on our ass, and I got up and saw stars. And I knew at that point, it's like, okay, maybe hockey's not for me. And again, hockey's not feeding my family at that point. If anything, it's costing way too much money between fees and beer and equipment and everything like that. But, you know, that's when I'm like, okay, I'm going to refocus on curling again, because the odds of me getting a concussion are significantly lower in curling. Now, again, the
not
only
zero,
rib I've ever broken, right. and
zero.
In fairness, the only rib I've ever broken in my life was on a curling rock a couple years ago. So I just, I'm with Milt, and I hope, and I know obviously the kind of gamer that Zach is, he's the kind of guy that won't be taken out under any circumstances.
Yep.
And all jokes aside, I'll talk about him being mid aside, all me saying I was right after the Grey Cup. This guy needs to focus on his health, and I hope he's doing that, and I hope he's not trying to force himself back, because it looks like he's pre-COVID Kolaris that was, again, coughing too hard away from, you know, not having a regular life the rest of the way.
Yeah, and I trust he and his family and the medical staff and everyone there will make the best decision available to them, and if they think he's good to go, then so be it. I'm with you. I don't want to question the guy whether his career decisions going forward, that's for him to make. He's a grown man. He can make those decisions.
Right.
But yeah, the hit itself, I mean, I don't really know what a defender is supposed to do in that situation. Like, I know, yes, there was contact to the head. I don't believe it was the first point of contact. I believe he got him with the chest first, and then the head sort of bopped him a bit at the end. You know, John Hodge actually asked a great question to Willie Jefferson after the game, because there's often been, and John's been one of these guys that talk about, well, why don't defenders aim just a little bit lower instead of like right at that spot, basically, because if you miss by an inch, you're hitting a guy in the head. And Willie basically said, like, okay, but there's so many other things that can happen when you put your head down like that. Okay, number one, maybe you get him clean, then you drive him into the turf, and that's still a penalty. Or, more likely, Kolaris then sees you coming, and he spins out, and you look like a fool.
100%.
So, like, you have to keep your head up and actually, you know, see it. So, like, I can see why you have to make the tackle like that. And it's just such a tough scenario for CJ Rivas, where it's like, okay, like, I get maybe by the letter of the law, perhaps it should have technically been a penalty, but it was such a one of the borderlines that we've ever seen. And I'm just like, it felt very hockey where the outcome influenced the call. Because we know, like, hockey certainly. Officials are very guilty of being like, oh, this guy got hurt, so we need to assess a penalty on this, even though it wasn't a penalty. Right? And, like, I agree. Yeah, like, I think you can, yes, you can look at it and you can interpret it 100% by the letter of the law that maybe it should be a penalty. I'm questioning whether a hit where a guy is clearly trying to do everything right should be a penalty or not, because, and I know bringing in gray zones and all this sort of stuff is tough with officiating, but at a certain point, it's football, and, like, we've done so much to protect quarterbacks. And I'm not saying we shouldn't protect quarterbacks, but it's just not even working. Like,
no.
Every quarterback in this league has missed time this year. 100% of starting quarterbacks in the CFL have missed time this year. Well, maybe not 100%. I don't know if Bo has. So everyone but Bo Levi Mitchell basically has missed at least, you know, part of a game this year due to injury.
Yes. Yes.
So at a certain point, it's like, okay, we're trying to protect the quarterbacks, and it's not really working. So I'm not saying scrap it all, but maybe some of this borderline stuff just isn't really helping. So, like, what are we doing here?
I've got three words for you for quarterbacks. Mandatory guardian caps.
I mean, that, maybe.
I mean that to me just seems like a really simple solution. Like, I get it. They can look a little goofy and stuff, but, like, when I see guys in the NFL wearing guardian caps, why the hell can't you? You're in the CFL. Like, if anything, those guys in the NFL, if they're at a place they never play again, they've got a nest egg. Some of you guys are making salesperson money. Some of you guys make less than salesperson money. I would be wearing a guardian cap for sure. And I guess as a guy that's been there and been through what concussions and neck injuries can do to your day-to-day life, I don't understand it. I know it's something that when my boys are older and playing football that I'm going to encourage that they do. But yeah, I get it. Like, it looked like it was called because it was Zach, and I think we were all in agreement of that. And you hate to see a guy to go down, but you're right. There's nothing else that CJ Revis could have done there, right? I think, and actually, you know it's borderline when most Bomber fans I've spoken to have agreed, especially some of those passionate ones.
Well, we
ones
didn't
I
hear
know.
From Wade Miller this week, so that's a positive.
That's I'm going to use my cousin Mike as an example. My cousin Mike is one of the most diehard Bomber. He's the biggest reason I'm a Bomber fan to this day, right? Like, my dad was born in Winnipeg, but my cousin Mike took me to my first games. He's the biggest reason I bleed blue. And when he's texting me going, how is that a penalty? I'm like, okay, right. Even the most hardcore Bomber fans are going, oh, shit, yeah, that one was not a great call.
Yeah, so, I mean, it is what it is at this point. It didn't end up being, I mean, obviously it was an important part of the game with Zach Claris going out the rest of the way. The penalty itself it extended the Bomber drive. It obviously negated a turnover, but didn't really harm the Riders in the end, so doesn't necessarily get swept under the rug, the penalty itself, at least. Obviously the aftermath of the hit lives on, but that's it. Just it's kind of just an unfortunate situation all around is kind of how I see it.
No, certainly I'm 100% with you.
So with that behind us now, the Riders have finished with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. For now, they do have a game later in this year. We'll see if it ends up mattering or not, but we'll get to that later. This week they do play the Montreal Alouettes.
Yes.
The Alouettes, who have lost.
And you're calling this an important game, which I think is
sneaky,
an interesting take.
A sneaky important game for this team. Not necessarily in terms of standings. Not necessarily, you know, like, they have to win this game for, like, the West Division or, you know, because Montreal's this or whatever the case may be. This has trap game written all over it.
Yes.
The Riders are coming off back-to-back emotional wins over their rivals, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
Yes.
They have a bye week next week. We have seen countless teams at any level of football in this situation sort of suffer a bit of a mental letdown and let a game get away from them in this situation.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when the opponent coming in is real down right now and had to pull a quarterback who isn't that good off the 6-game injured list to try and survive this football game. Because the options outside of McLeod Bethel Thompson have somehow worked even worse than McLeod Bethel Thompson.
Which is wild, because you can tell he is past his prime and his heart is not in it.
yeah, I don't know, I won't necessarily say that his heart isn't in it, but yeah, he's certainly not playing to the degree that we expect even a 75% McLeod Bethel Thompson to play, let's say.
Yes.
So this game, in a way, to me, will say a heck of a lot about this team. I'm not going to say that they are doomed and everything is wrong if they lose. They will just be another and another long line of teams because we are human, and sometimes you let your guard down a little bit. They got caught in a situation where they, you know, two big emotional wins against rivals, bye week coming up. Sometimes you sort of naturally sort of look ahead a little bit and breathe maybe a little too much and don't stay as focused on the task as you should. So if the Riders lose this game or they have to somehow sort of squeak it out, it'll just be one of those situations more than likely. If they come out and they handle business and they actually cover this like 8.5 point spread or whatever it is right now and thoroughly beat the Montreal Alouettes, then to me, this will be one of those teams, as much as I hate the stupid, we're just focused on this week, we're just looking to go 1-0 this week bullshit. Then they'll be like, okay, these guys actually believe that, because here was a very easy situation where you could slip up and you did not.
Well, and if you do slip up, keep in mind, Calgary's on the bye this week.
Yeah.
So if you slip up, your two-game lead in the division could suddenly become one while you can't do anything about it while you sit at home and relax. And on top of looking ahead, I think not only are they past the two big wins, but then all of a sudden you've got Edmonton, Ottawa, Toronto, Winnipeg, BC to close the season.
I mean, there's no free space anymore, but yeah.
No, but there's, you're right, there's no free space, but these are all games that this team should win. Right? Like, they've proven they should win all of these games.
Yeah, should. So, whether they will or not is another question, but should, yes.
Exactly. And that's the key word, right? So to me, we've seen it a million and one times in football at all levels, and it's really going to prove this team's mental toughness. And I think, and now here comes the Fraser curse part. I think this team can do it.
I think they can, but we'll see.
But there are times where the business-like approach. There are times where the business-like approach does this team wrong. When they can't get fired up for a big moment, when they can't spark themselves to a comeback. And we've talked about, you know, Corey Mace's leadership. Now, again, Trevor Harris has seemingly become that guy to say, men, follow me. But there are times the business-like approach, I think, does this team well. And I believe this is one of those games, right? It's got trap game written all over it. 7 ways from Sunday, this screams trap game, this screams trouble, this screams losing to a team you probably shouldn't lose to. But I think this is where the Corey Mace business-like approach, go in and do your job, is going to be very, very beneficial. Another underrated plus coming out of the Labor Day Banjo Bowl series is Brett Lowther has apparently found it.
A little bit. He still missed the convert, but yeah.
Right. But I mean, he outperformed Sergio Castillo.
Mm-hmm.
As much as I physically cringe as I say that, because I love my guy Sergio, he outperformed Sergio Castillo, right? So you've got a Montreal team coming in here. You know, this defense has made Zach Collaros, Chris Trevler, really any quarterback look very average. I think they can do the job. I think that business-like approach, they will do the job. And then you start having that conversation as to when do you let guys rest a little bit for, you know, the last playoff push here. So I've now thoroughly Fraser-cursed them. So now Montreal is going to come out in Death Star mode. McLeod Bethel Thompson's going to look like a young Anthony Calvillo. Their running back's going to look like Mike Pringle.
Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.